Good morning, honourable members. I trust that you had a good long weekend and that you have celebrated Workers' Day appropriately also. Honourable members, I'm not sure if we can wait any longer. We certainly don't have a quorum. If we were to proceed, it means we can't take any decisions in this meeting. We can only receive the presentations. We have apologies from Honourable Killian. She's at the other meeting of the Powers and Privilege Committee. Honourable Mpunu is also at the other committee. Honourable Kikana is on his way. I trust Honourable Wolmerans is on his way. And then Honourable Kubisa also apologised. Those are the only apologies that we are having. I'm afraid we are waiting for people that are not going to come. And I would suggest, Honourable Members, that I suggest, Honourable Member, insofar as the agenda is concerned, and having opened and welcomed all of you, that we proceed to receive the presentation from the department. We will not be able to deal with the minutes on the agenda because we don't have a quorum here. If there's a quorum, then of course we will proceed with the minutes, but as it stands now, I'm keeping that one in abeyance. Would that be in order, Honourable Members? Okay. Thank you very much. May I welcome the delegation from the Department of Higher Education and Training. Thank you very much for coming. Our briefing from yourself would be on just providing us the latest development as it relates to the community education and training sector. I'm going to hand over to you, Acting DDG, and you will remind us who you have in your delegation.
Morning, Chair. Thank you very much, and morning, honourable members. I just would like also to tender an apology for the DG. I spoke with him this morning, and he indicated that because of other pressing matters relating to NSFAS, he will not be able to attend this briefing. With me on my left is Mr. Tsila Mroy, and recently appointed Director for Lecturer Development. And on my right is Mrs. Esther Godison, also recently appointed Director for Management and Governance Support in the department. Just going ahead with the presentation. Oh, I forgot that one. Sorry, Chair. My name is Begum Mashaw. I'm Acting Deputy Director General for Community Education and Training, otherwise Chief Director for Planning in the CET. Chair, on the screen is basically the outline of my presentation. As you have indicated in the past that there's always merit in making a presentation in the form of a conversation rather than engaging in the technicalities of what is being presented. So some of the issues, I'm going to deal with them off the cuff while I'm following the format that is presented. The branch was formed in 2016. In other words, I think this is its 16, 17, 18, this is its third year. When the branch was formed, it had only two senior managers. It was myself and Mr. Diari in charge of the rest of what is called community education and training. But over time, we have been able to make the following appointments. On the screen, the first colleague who just been promoted.
Don't speak away from the mic. As you move with the mic.
Okay. The colleague on the extreme left is Mr. Diale, who has been appointed Chief Director for Education, Training and Development. And the next colleague is Dorothy Masipa, Mrs. She's Chief Director of Financial Planning and Management. And Mr. Silamulu on my left is recently appointed Director Lecturer Development, and on my right is Mrs. Godison, Director for Governance and Management Support, and the lady on the extreme right on top is Ms. Sibaswa Rantle, who is Director for Budget Planning and Financing. Just below them is the support staff, the admin support staff. Ms. Naledi Lekhodi is the Senior Admin Officer in my Chief Directorate. Duduzile Muloi is the Chief Director for Governance and is the Personnel Assistant for Governance and Management Support. Ms. Miahawo is the PA to the Director Institutional Support. Lecturer Development, Ms. Kensani Muchavi is the PA. Ntombi Murake is the PA in my Chief Directorate. And Ms. Bungiwe Mashang is the PA for budgeting and financing. And the last one is the PA to Ms. Masipa, who is the Chief Director for Planning. In other words, Chair, the point I'm trying to make is that we have moved. At one point, there were only two of us as senior managers, but the department has been able to appoint other senior managers in the branch who, in case I sneeze, I will be able to present without waiting for me. I'm no longer alone. There are capable men and women who can be able to steer the ship. What is on the screen now is the story that you know. Basically, this is not an update at all. It's just an indication of the chair and honorable members, there has been no change in the budget allocation for this function. Over the MTF, it's 2.3, 2.5, 2.7 billion. In other words, it's a CPIX adjustment. On the following slide, you will realize that when you look at the transfers column, that is the amount of money which is transferred from the department in order to deal with goods and services for the centers. That is 112 million. For 2018-19. And you will also notice that the Chief Director of the sub-program systems planning has got 2.1 billion. That is because the salaries for lecturers, the payment, the compensation of employees come from that sub-program. Education and training has at least 15 million, and basically that has got to do with the fact that the Navy, which is paid by the department to the ETDP CETA, also resides in that item. Basically, Chair, the point I was trying to make, and I'm done mourning. I just have to get on with the job. It is against the background of this allocation that we must achieve the many things that we have in our head. the compensation of employees takes about 92% of the budget in the slide 6. And what is left, the compensation also covers the compensation in the branch, in the CET colleges, and in the regional units. And it also, the compensation allocation covers gratuity payments for ex-officials, in other words, those who have gone on retirement. Then we are left with 2.6 of the total budget, which covers operations for the branch, CET colleges, and the regional offices. The operational budget for CET colleges and regional CET units is retained by the department. You will recall, Chair, that in the previous meeting, there was a question from when we came to present the APP for 18-19. There was a question which was, what is happening with the budget for the community colleges and what's happening with the budget for the centers? The budget of the colleges is retained by the department and we administer it on their behalf because they do not yet meet the requirement of the PFMA to get a certificate to be able to handle public funds in a manner that is acceptable in terms of the PFMA. The regional offices are basically the department, therefore there is no transfers to them. The centers, we transfer that amount of money to about 37 TVET colleges who administer procurement on behalf of the centers, procurement of whatever nature. The procurement is submitted and the TVET colleges procure using their supply chain management and procurement processes in the TVET colleges. As I've just indicated, right at the beginning when the function started, the department entered into a memorandum of agreement with 37 TVET colleges. The purpose for TVET colleges to assist in procurement of goods and services on behalf of CET colleges. The reason being there are no financial management systems and capacity to receive funds. The period of this arrangement has recently been extended until 31 March 2019. We are putting the deadline of 31 March 2019 because we hope that the project we have started with CITEC would at least have put in place by then the required financial management systems and infrastructure in CET colleges. I'll go into the details of the project later. The project started in March. It's going to last for a duration of 36 months or probably even less, depending on the pace of what they deliver. Once they've delivered whatever they're supposed to deliver, they don't have to be there for the sake of being in CET colleges. Once they've delivered, but at the moment the arrangement is that they will be there for 6 months. Now, we have these nine institutions. At the moment, as I've indicated, we procure for them, we manage their budget, but it's really not an ideal situation. And that is why we have sourced funding from the NSF to assist us to build systems, financial management capacity in each of the nine CET colleges. The South African Institute for Chartered, of Chartered Accountants has been contracted by the department to provide financial management support. It's actually not financial management support per se. It is building capacity for financial management so that once they have done that and they get out, because we already have deputy directors for finance in each CET building. The project commenced on the 1st of March. It is aimed at assisting the department and the CET colleagues in providing support in setting up proper financial management systems and internal controls in order to meet the requirement of Section 38(1)(j) of the Public Finance Management Act before they can receive their own funds. And that is why I was saying this is a priority, so that we take out the funding for the operational budget for CET College, we transfer it to them instead, because it is inconveniencing them, particularly when they want to procure stuff. They have to go through the procurement difficulties in the department, because also there isn't much staff there to handle the rest of the nine colleges plus the procurement responsibilities of the department. Now, this I've already alluded to, the financial management capacity of the department. We have nine colleges established in 2015, and we have a myriad of adult learning centers now converted into community colleges. Look at a particular point. The money we transfer to centers and the money we keep in the department has got to be audited as from the day, the year these institutions were established. And so one of the responsibilities we have given to SAICA is please reconstruct the finance allocation to each college and reconstruct financial statements for each year so that then they can be audited. So that I'm hoping that with effect from by the end of this year, at least 2015-16, would have been constructed. In other words, the financial statement would have been developed and ready for auditing by external auditors. Chair and honorable members, we got a letter from the AG that at least for 2015-16 and 17 and 18, they are not going to go into the CET space. However, they must be audited by a reputable auditing firm. Now, the responsibility to appoint auditors in this space is the responsibility of councils. But that will happen with the support of the department, because even that space in this sector is still relatively weak. And therefore, it is an intervention which must be led by ourselves. Because at the moment we can't, while we understand it's their responsibility, but it has got to be guided from the center until the sector is able to take proper supply chain management decisions on its own with regard to the appointment of auditors. I've indicated that the operational budget is being retained while the other transfers are sent to the 37 CET colleges. The colleges need to first satisfy the requirement of the PFMA. What is this SAICA project going to deliver? Their work is divided into seven parts. First, help us with the ICT infrastructure. in each head office of the college. And secondly, establish governance policies and make sure that they are implemented. One of the issues which we have been talking about in this space is the management information systems. And it is part of this project. That business management systems, basically in our language, is CETMIS, Community Education and Training Management Information System, and that is what they must also deliver as well. And the technical support to the colleges, and even more so with regard to supply chain, they must leave the policies in place and guide colleges on how to implement those policies. We have actually, as you may recall, that in one of our annual reports and our performance, we said we were going to develop policies, governance policies, for CET colleges, for councils to amend and or adapt and then adopt as policies of the college. What now remains is to then check whether they are implementing those. However, in the context of the supply chain management function being in TVET colleges and in the department, they can't implement those yet. And therefore, the SICA project must enable them to appropriately implement the supply chain management policies. Financial reporting is one of the deliverables, and financial department and operations management, and those are the things which, that is the capacity which the project must deliver. Now, Chair and Honourable Members, I've made reference to education, training and development as a function in the branch. And that function entails teaching and learning in the CET colleges. Now that we have established the policy and legislative regime, now we are implementing it. We had a time when we focused on developing legislation, and now we are monitoring whether these policies are being implemented in the CET committee. That list on slide 10. Now, when we monitor whether teaching and learning is happening, we rely on biannual report starting from 2017. There is a report with each college, each region, as a monitoring function must produce. We rely on the diagnostic reports from each CET college. There is also an annual survey for CET colleges. By law, a CET college must submit an annual report. And what we have done this year is also to start what we call lecturer roadshows. It is after realizing that you talk to councils and you talk to management, but the interpretation of what we are saying does not land as it is to the lecturers. And as a result, we have engaged quite a number of lecturers. We had two sessions per province. We know that is not enough. That is why it is something that we must engage on as part of our operations at least once or twice a year. And there are revelations which we find when we engage directly with lecturers, the challenges they face, and the demands they make. And one province chair which we ultimately did not go to was Gauteng. We visited every province, but Gauteng next door, we could not go there because there was a fault in terms of the financial transactions. Quite a number of lecturers were not paid. And then we said, no, we can't go talk about road shows. Can we fix the error of paying the lecturers first? And so by the end of the year, we had fixed the error in terms of payments, but we still owe Gauteng a road show to engage with them. You might also recall that at the beginning of this year, we issued a circular which was articulating to the system that, look, we will not be able to standardize the conditions of service in 2018. This had to be said because in a previous circular, the department had committed to standardize in 2018, but that was just not feasible because there were quite a number. When you standardize conditions of service, you have to go into a collective bargaining chamber and say, we are moving you from the Educators Employment Act to the Public Service Act. And then in terms of the Public Service Act, these are the new conditions, and a lot of detail in that. And that has not happened, but we are still on track to, as I will indicate, as I present on HR matters during the course of this presentation. Now, also, to keep the sector together, we decided at least we have strategic coordination meetings where the principals of colleges, we meet with them at least four times a year together with the regional office directors just to get the temperature of what is happening and what is not happening and yet it is supposed to happen. There are instances where the proof doesn't come out until you go there yourself. And you find out, like in the case of this province, the instability in this province basically comes from the fact that the management has not been hands-on in terms of when they are informed there is a problem and then they go there and deal with the problem. And you know, there is also an approach of avoidance. There is a problem, you just avoid it, hoping that it's going to go away. And that didn't happen until you had the documentation which was referred to you. And I have had three meetings with the college in this region and the regional management of the Western Cape, and trying to sort out the issue of the payment of lecturers, the issue of whose responsibility is it to appoint lecturers, because I discovered that center managers appoint whoever, and then if that person is appointed by the center manager, that's an illegal appointment. The function is delegated to the principal, subject to a proper recruitment process. You just can't come with your cousin and your brother and say, here is a job. And that is the problems we are dealing with here. And I'm hoping that probably by the end of the year, we would have cleaned quite a number of things. And also, I'm hoping that the problem relating to the conditions of service, we are moving towards finding the solution so that that part then doesn't disturb education training, because that's where greater instabilities lie. Now, As part of our monitoring, we took a sample of 390 community learning centers, and we asked them to do a self-diagnosis. A survey of lecturer qualification took place just to make a determination of what the qualifications update looked like. We had an oversight meeting with principals and deputy principals. Lecturer roadshows have indicated, and then we also have a chair and honorable members. We get into the space where we look at the results, the subject, and then deal with the results part, what we need to do going forward. As you deal with the, let me give you an example. We have one teacher whose mathematics has always been at 15%, you take this person for training. The following year, the same person, the average is 15%, you take the same person for training. And I was saying to principals, look, let's put in place, that's ourselves, the department, the employer, a performance management regime. Because it doesn't help to corner the teacher at the end of the year and you have not been with them through a rigorous performance management regime so that by the end of the year you are not surprised. You are not surprised why the performance in the subject. And also you cannot assume that always the performance in the subject is the responsibility of the lecturer. There are quite a number of variables which you have to look at, but do deal with the capacity of the of your training staff. What we found are the following things in terms of the surveys and roadshows and the diagnosis which we did. Both lecturer attendance and student attendance is a challenge in this sector. You have, in some provinces, seasonal attendance. At a particular part of the season, there is nobody because there is some work which they have found which is going to pay them, and then they migrate, and then they will come back later and join the system. And this happens also in terms of certain traditions. Provinces affected, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and KZN, Eastern Cape. And there are times where young men just get out of the community learning centers and continue to practice their initiation, rite of passage practices, and then once they are done, they come back. Now, these are not the things you can train a lecturer to have capacity. The issue is, how do you deal with them when they come back? And Chair, I haven't heard that there's a package we can prepare for lecturers to deal with such eventualities. The thing we are trying to implement, but we are implementing it with wrong people. To diversify program from purely academic program to skills program is being a challenge, because the people who are in front of these young people and adults are school teachers. That is why at one time I was saying, Chair, there may be merit, I'm hoping we are going to do this going forward, in hybridizing the kind of lecturer or teacher core in the community learning centers. Or at least you hire artisans who are used by TVET colleges to come and teach here, even if it is a part-time. But with the current type of teachers who we have, who are exclusively academic people, it's going to take us a relatively long while to achieve the intent that we have to make this area, to introduce the innovations that we want to introduce. About 30-40% of the staff here are either unqualified or underqualified. See, your rural areas, nobody wants to go there. And a case in point is KZN. Majority of the lecturers, particularly in the rural north, majority of the lecturers there are grade 12s to keep the classes going. Now, we need to insist that we need qualified lecturers. But then we must also take the consequences that some centers will have to shut down. But what is ideal? Is it ideal to render a service and you know the quality of the service is bad? Or just not to render the service at all? And those are the three sides of the coin which we need to take into account. The materials which I use, we have decided, no, let's produce a catalog nationally, because the materials which are used, either the content is completely outdated and in some instances completely irrelevant to what is being prescribed in terms of the unit standard. Chair, I'm not going to dwell much on the infrastructure challenges. We have had our detailed discussions regarding the unavailability of appropriate infrastructure. Where you have a building of your own, like some centers in Gauteng, they own their own building. But because there is no budget for maintenance, the colleges have to go creative to look for partners so that they can get funding to maintain the dilapidating infrastructure. The findings, we have to deal seriously with lecturer development. The plan has got to be provided by ourselves, because until such time that the management, whose capacity we are trying to build, they understand that when they get a levy fund, they know exactly what that funding is going to do with regard to the skilling of lecturers. There is information gaps in terms of the lecturer knowledge. We find that they are qualified and correctly placed lecturers. They are qualified and lecturers who are not correctly placed. In other words, I have a PhD in history and the rest of other things, and you sent me to go and teach mathematics because there is just no one who is qualified. But because I at one point knocked at the door of a university and successfully made it, and then you get placed in a subject for which you are not qualified. That is one of the things which we must correct. And then I've already referred to the unqualified lecturers. We are also trying to deal with a rigorous regime of assessment from the AET level 1, 2 and 3. In other words, your GET certificate starts with the first literacy programs, adult education level 1, 2, 3, and then at 4 you sit for a national examination. Now what colleges do, they tend to forget about the people they have to train to be able to gain literacy, and they concentrate on those who have to be examined to gain the GETC. Now, we have to go back and fix that, and that is what we are working on. That if they are there, they need to be taken through a rigorous literacy program so that by the time they have to write the GETC, and then they are fully literate and fully numerate. I'll just take bullet number 4 on slide 15. For 2015, at least what we could measure in the GETC, it was 37%. In other words, people who were certifiable, people who were eligible to get certificate, 37%. And in 2016, the number dropped to 36%. Chair, I did get the statistics for 2017, but I didn't put it here because it was completely, absolutely wrong. Just to give you an example, if you know that 86,000 people sat for an examination, but the people who are giving you the results, that number is halved by 50%. You can't explain what happened to them. And I said, I asked my colleagues in exam, please go and fix this so that I can present something which is credible and plausible. As it is, you can see that you have one number of entries, but when you publish the results, you are publishing the results for 50%. Let's go back and engage with provinces, and that is why it's not here. I'm hoping to present that data next time. I will have a better data for 2017. The findings from the diagnostic report has to do with student admission. The recruitment, enrollment, placement, deregistration, and appropriate policies have got to be put in place with regard to student admission. Please note that also this function is not the function of the department. The admission into these centers is, the policy must be developed by council. But in the absence of the policies developed by council, we take the lead, develop it. Do you agree or you don't agree? If you disagree with the policy we give you, please give us a better one. And that's the attitude we are adopting with regard to policy development in this area. I've already referred to the lecturer appointment and placement. We found that was a problem. I've already referred to, we are continuing, Chair and honorable members, when we started the function, we said, please, two things must happen. Hold so that this thing does not disintegrate, but understand that you have to gradually move it into the new. And the pace of moving the community education and training to offer true community education and training is very slow. I can provide a number of reasons. However, quite a number of colleges, probably I have listed them in one of the slides, are beginning to enter into partnership to get partners who are going to assist them to move away from academic program. You offer an academic program if there is a demand for it, but otherwise you offer a skills program provided you are accredited. Because also the QCT of programs, you have to be accredited to offer those. Those are the recommendations which we got from the lecturer roadshows. One of the issues in this sector is a relatively unacceptably high dropout rate. And we have agreed with colleagues that at a particular point we must commission an investigation to find out why. Why you start with a number around 300,000, by the end of the year, almost 40% of those are gone. Or by the time you go for examinations, and probably another 20 is no longer there. We just need to find out what the reason is. Because the examinations in the sector are still managed by provinces, we have also decided that we must engage with the heads of education department to raise the issue of inaccurate results, late results, because they are responsible for the function. It's the matter that we are going to take. I have already established a committee which deals with only examinations. We meet twice a year to deal only with examination matters. One of the things that we need to do, but also at the college level, see, the difficulty of running an advocacy exclusively from the national office. A community member who is phoning from Kwanongong is asking, you know what, I am here at Osut. What is the nearest learning center there? That is why when we drive advocacy, it has got to be both. It must have both a national footprint, but also the colleges and centers must have advocacy programs which they run, particularly to advertise how is this center different from the other in terms of program offerings. There is laxity, Chair. Let me just retreat a bit. When we took over the function, we realized we had absolutely no capacity to run examinations, absolutely none, because the examinations here were run by the province, but using the province staff. These are not people who then moved to the DHET. They remained here together with the infrastructure. And we said, well, Minister, please, can we enter into an MOU with the MECs at the level of the minister and with the SGs at the level of the DG so that provinces continue to administer exams? That protocol was signed, but not all provinces are adhering to it. There is a laxity here and there, and that is the matter again we must raise with HEDCOM, that there is a laxity by some of the officials in sticking to the protocols.
You speed up a little bit, please.
I beg your pardon?
Bit of speed.
Okay, I'm going to run, Chair. Policy mediation, Chair, that's what we are doing. We did it in end of 2017-18. We're also going to do it particularly for regional officials, the officials who are in the regional office and officials who are in the district. whatever budget we have to concentrate on getting up-to-date, adequate teaching and learning material, lecturer development, and feedback to the centers based on the monitoring that we do. Now, we indicated in the policy on community colleges that this sector can't even begin to fly if it doesn't enter into partnership to run to differentiate programs. Here in the Western Cape, the college has a partnership with Vodacom for provision of computers and related software. Eastern Cape, for plant production, there is a relationship with a partnership with the New Hope Revival. Mercita is helping the Free State with accreditation and skills training. ARC Skills works with the community in college in Gauteng for skills training and the sourcing of funding. The infrastructure utilization, the KZN College has acquired a building from the Bidla Local Authority. Mpumalanga has a relationship with Glencore Mines for infrastructure. In fact, they donated the whole center to the, and ETDP CETA is dealing with the ECD training there. Same in the Northern Cape is the ETDP CETA, the Health and Wellness CETA, and MLab. All those partnerships are assisting us to change the system from what it used to be purely academic, and change it to include skills program. The enrollment as at the end of March, stood at 185 in general academic prog, 185,000. Occupational programs, it stood at 3,130. The occupational programs are listed in slide 21. Those are management structures. The state as at the end of March. In order to support them, we ran induction workshop before the end of the financial year. We just got 3 million euros from the EU for specialized capacity building of councils, management, and SRCs. And this project with regard to SRC will come to an end on the 8th of April 2018. We are done with management and councils. Now, the department has completed the development of a CET management information system. What remains now is for SAICA to establish that capacity in the CET colleges so that the CET colleges are able to supply the accurate data into the data warehouse. And one of the seven streams of the SAICA project is the development of business management systems for colleges, including what we call SETNIS. Now, we also had a discussion, Chair, with regard to what is happening with the certificate. In the meeting that I had with the exams, the estimates of the certificates which have not been issued, I asked my colleague, since when? And he says, as far back as 2001. They are doing a completeness test to check how many certificates are outstanding. In other words, the number which you see there, once they have completed the completeness test, it may increase. We probably might have 2,000 or 20,000, that's to say. However, on the 10th, on the weekend of 15 to 18, all system administrators in the province are going to sit with our examination section and CETA to try to clean this backlog. And if they can do it in the manner that they did in Northwest. In Northwest, whatever is left is 2017. They were able to clean the rest of the previous years. And that was CETA and the Department of Education in Northwest and the system administrator in Northwest. And now on the weekend of 15 to 18 May, they are going to deal with this backlog, and I probably may be able to come back and just indicate what has happened after that. But that is the extent estimated at the moment. Now, conditions of service. I think the introductory slide, I won't go through it. The point is, some of these discrepancies are discrepancies we appropriated to ourselves when we took over the function. There are 9 colleges, estimated number 16,000, and of important to note is that they do not have such benefit as pension, medical aid and housing. Only the 37% in lieu of benefit is paid. You know, the sad part, Chair, is the fact that when this person passes away, they have really nothing to show for the work they've been doing for, some of them, 20 years. And they have no pension. Now, it is this kind of injustice that we must now confront and see how we standardize it. This is the work which we still need to do before we standardize. Our corporate services colleagues are working on the post-provisioning norms. In other words, how is the system going to be staffed on the basis of which we can finalize the conditions of service. In the meantime, we do need to have an alternative in order to stabilize the sector. The work done at the moment is that our HR has looked at the current salaries paid to the CET lecturers and is considering putting them onto the nearest applicable part-time salary within the public service. This is an effort to do away with the 37% in lieu of benefit and convert it into benefits. This is going to result in minimum hours to be 3-8 per day. As you would understand, in the public service, in terms of the public service regulations, the allowable minimum number of hours is 3, 5 out of 8, 6 out of 8, and 8 out of 8. Now, a person who has been working for 2 hours, we have to move that person into three hours. And then we check how far away from the current notch allowed by the public service regulations, and then we move them there. But this is a proposal. We still have to go and negotiate on it. But the idea is to give these people medical aid, housing allowance, and pension in terms of the public service regulations and the PSA. There is a group of teachers in the system who are already employed by the DBE, and those teachers You can't give them benefits twice. And as a result, because they are not employable on a permanent basis, they will continue to use the claiming system. The convention may not require additional budget. However, it is important to note that we have not finalized the computation of the exact. When I come back, I need to say this is what it is going to cost, or it is going to cost nothing. At the moment, tentatively, we think if we move them like we are doing into the public service allowable hours, it may not have serious financial implications. And this is going to be a temporary measure just to stabilize the sector in terms of permanency and giving them the allowances required. Chair, last year we spoke about the collective bargaining chamber. My colleagues are working on it. In HR, as you would see that already there has been a meeting of ministers, minister and the Minister of Public Service and with the SGs, and requested to conclude the matter of establishing a bargaining team. The DHET has drafted a collective agreement which details how the chamber can be established within the GPSSBC, and also in order to initiate the conversation. So far, we have received no feedback from the ST. The matter is solely in the hands of the CSBC, and I think the department has done what it should do, except that now just to keep following up what exactly is still out there. With regard to REQV, of importance, Chair and Honourable Members, is the last bullet. There are currently 1,000 cases which are in the process. In other words, people who have improved their qualifications initially had to submit to the department to update their qualifications, and that had serious implication in terms of the workload in the department, and then the department decided to decentralize the capturing of the REQVs. And to date, there are only 1,000 cases left, and about 4,200 cases have been dealt with by the department since 2015. The last Chair, I will not go through it, is the story of my life. Thank you very much.
You ended off in a manner that reminds me of the Brady Bunch. It is the story. Honourable members, thank you very much. There's no one that's going to add.
Chair, I really would appreciate members asking questions, because if you are presenting an update from your own corp, you might not actually know in any finer details what is it that the honourable members want to know. And so what I presented creates a frame. But if there is anything that I have not presented, I will welcome questions. If I can't answer them, I will write back to the chair and say, no, now I have found the answer. Please.
Colleagues next to you will certainly also help you to answer before you ditch the question.
Yeah.
I note Honourable Kekana's hand, and then Bazoli, and then Mavunda, and then Honourable Van der Westhuizen. can Honorable Kikana be assisted?
Chair, with due respect, I think next time we'll have to take presenters to a workshop of using the mic. We've repeatedly asked that people speak into the mic because we can hear but we miss some of the words, and this has continued. So I duly request that all members in the future, when you speak, make sure that you are audible enough, because that helps us relax and listen carefully and hear everything. Well, my question is on the first one, on the lecturers for TVET. You know, wherever we go, this thing of practicals, that students are saying we are taught theory, we don't have lecturers who can teach, and they themselves have practical knowledge to teach, is a big thing. Now, if somebody has a PhD, and because he has a PhD in history, he's said to be placed to teach mathematics, I don't think we should allow that type of patchwork to continue, because I'm personally not convinced that we don't have maths teachers. I have somebody I know with a BSc measuring in chemistry 1, 2, 3 and mathematics 1, 2. He's still seated at home without a job. I've sent his CV to basic education because Minister Ndimu Tsakha has said they give them a crash course of pedagogic to help them have method, and but that would also apply to TVET. But up to now, over a year now, he's still unemployed. I gave his CV to Mampaho, our content advisor here. So when we are told they are not maths teachers, but you know people who does have maths with a good qualification and they want to work and they can't work, you know, sorry? You're not sure actually what is the actual story. Number two, if there are workshops and infrastructure that is not maintained, but we have a budget and we can budget for it, I don't know who is really to blame, because resources are there. It is for us to allocate them. If we're saying resources are not there, I would understand. But when they are there in the fee-free education and we're not allocating them, I don't know who's to... It's just that you get frustrated, because this country will one day be all in fire simply because we're not doing the right thing that we're supposed to do to get people. Because once, for as long as we have unemployment of the youth, that is a recipe for disaster. And I don't know why we can't fix these things. What is our problem? We know what is the right thing to do, but for one reason or the other, we're not doing it. At least let's try and do it, because resources are there, so that we've got nobody to blame but ourselves if things are not working. But it's so frustrating when resources are there and we're not putting them where they're supposed to be. Those are my comments, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for your brutally honest presentation, making it clear to us that this is a sector that's really in trouble. You have a massive dropout rate, you have unqualified teachers, you don't have enough money, certificates aren't being given out, your staff are unhappy and not regularized, and you haven't tried to hide any of it from us. So thank you very much for that. I'm still learning about this sector, so if you can just help me, you've got about 300,000 students, 16,000 lecturers in 3,000 centres. Is that roughly correct? Very roughly. So that means you have 100 students per sector, per centre, and 5 lecturers per centre on average. So these are very, very tiny little places. And who is in charge of that centre then? Who makes sure that those 5 teachers arrive, that they do what they're supposed to do, and that the pupils all arrive and that they do what they're supposed to do, given that many of these centres must be very far away from each other? And you do wonder what goes on there. So if you can just give us a little bit more of a physical description, since I don't think we've done an oversight of it to any of these centres. More of a sense of what it's like in these centres and how they work and so on. Then, just if you could clarify how many of the lecturers are unqualified, and why, if they're unqualified, are you going to put them all on proper conditions of service? I mean, how is that justified? That the civil service is going to expand by, say, 10,000 people or 8,000 people or whatever the number is, none of whom are qualified to do the job that you're now going to put them in. That seems to me to be an anomaly. I notice in terms of the kinds of qualifications that in Gauteng, the vast majority of your students want to repeat matric. Is that right? That's 40,000. That's almost it's a huge proportion of the students as a whole. So that really makes them look like different kinds of organizations from the way you're presenting them, which is that huge numbers of them are there for adult literacy, and huge numbers of them are for matric. And then some of them are there for the GETC. And you call all of those academic qualifications. And then your practical, and that's 189,000 students. And then your practical qualifications are only 3,000 students. In other words, you're saying you want this system, which already isn't working well, to become something different from what it is, while you're at the same time trying to make it work well, and while you have 40% of the lecturers underqualified. So it seems as though you are setting yourself impossible tasks, which will then take the next 20 years to implement, and which will never be fully successfully implemented. If students really want to go there in order to complete their matric, maybe that's what we should be giving them, if that's the demand. And then my last question is, if these skills, this list of skills on page 11, which is on slide number 21, woodwork, pottery, painting, beading, and all that kind of thing, these are quite modest skills, but would a CETA be interested in funding any of that? Do any of them fall logically under a CETA, and would the funding of the provision of those skills be something that they'd be interested in doing? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Only to acknowledge, Chairperson, the good presentation done. I think it is practical, because it talks to the real issues. like slide number 30. It deals with the issues which time and again lecturers at this institution or level of institution are complaining about the payments, which sometimes get frustrated, because if one worked for almost 6 months and was taken from pillar to post, go to Pretoria, go wherever, and not finding exactly what is it that they should do. And I think it frustrates a lot. But I'm not sure if the recommendation will solve the problem that says you want to put them next to the salary payments or benefits. Because I don't think our law allows people to work for so many years without registered for the pension. I mean even on the farms, those who work on the farms, you will know that there must be a sort of register. People will have to register for the pension. I'm not sure about the Labour Act. What does the Labour Act say with regard to that situation? So I think we also need to check around that as to whether are we not exploiting workers by giving them a job which will not in the end prepare their future exit. And it is termed as unemployable lecturers. And how unemployable they are. It's because of the age, or it's because of the qualifications, or it is because they were registered with another section of government or department, which makes them not to qualify to become to qualify for what they were supposed to benefit. Meanwhile, they are selling their services, to the government. So those are some of the things which maybe I would want to get clarity on. And I might have mixed a lot of things in one basket, but it is based on the presentation. Thanks, Chair.
Vander Woods Hayson, please.
Thank you, Acting Chair. Chair, I must agree that the picture we've seen this morning is not one that is one that excites one and that can convince me that this department is really ready and has got a vision to take these community education and training centres forward. I've been concerned, and thank you, I think you referred to my unhappiness when the annual performance plans were shared with us some 2 weeks ago, about the lack of vision, and in the light of the dire need that I believe that there is for all those young South Africans that drop out of school, the thousands of people that have lost their jobs and need retraining, etc. Now, my first observation, and this comes from an answer to a question I asked regarding the numbers at our community education centers, is that under this department or under your watch, the numbers at our community education centers have dropped considerably. 2015, 250,000, I'm rounding, wrote the GETC ABED level 4. In 2017, that number has dropped to about 40%, 209,000 of learners that wrote that. Also, the number of learners that passed dropped considerably, and those that have achieved the NQF level 1 qualification has also dropped. As a matter of fact, I must still probably ask the question for 2017, but the last figure you could provide me with, the 2016 one, was only 28,024 learners obtained their level 1 qualification. This is, and you refer to the unproductivity of the sector, but I mean, if you really look at how unproductive it is, it is absolutely shocking. And we would like to see in our country these figures growing and expanding, and the successes and the success rates going up. If you know that something is going backwards, you need a very forceful intervention to turn things around. But we don't see, to my mind, that forceful intervention. The next thing that I would like to hear from you is, how do you see an ideal center of this kind? Because in another parliamentary question, you've said that in some provinces there are no permanent staff members at these colleges, yet there are thousands of people on a part-time basis appointed. In Limpopo, the answer said 1,700 part-time. Limpopo, I think they were all full-time. Let me just quickly check here. And then in some of the other provinces, there were zero full-time staff. So there is this absolute imbalance after how many years that you've taken over from the provincial administrations, because I think what we see there is the history of these centers being left to provinces to implement with very little guidance from central government as to how they will be funded, etc. So how do you see such a center? Do you see such a center operating in the evenings as well as throughout the day? Do you see such a center operating over weekends? If they're mostly operating in the evenings, then, you know, I would just think that the infrastructure would look vastly different. You would probably be able to share infrastructure with basic education. If you think of after-hours training, I think then it makes sense to have only part-time staff, people that feel that after they have done their 8 hours stint for an employer, that they still have some 2 hours in the evening. But now I hear from you that there's a model to move towards a minimum of a 3/8 appointment. Again, my experience has been that these centers often operate from Monday night to Thursday night, 4 evenings. Fridays, people want to spend outside of class. Now, if I translate 3/8 into 4 evenings, it means that the classes will have to continue until quite late at night, whereas quite often my experience has been it runs from 7 to 9. So what is your vision? How do you see these centers going forward? Do you see them with a core of full-time staff plus some part-time staff for the specialist, and where the classes are perhaps not big enough to warrant full-time staff? Please share that with us, and please take us along on that dream of yours. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation, a very honest presentation. But I must say I am very worried, given the fact that you've given us the figures of 40% of dropouts. You said there's about 40% dropouts. And I'm worried what happens to the 60%, because the picture that you painted here of the lecturers, of what's happening, seemingly those people are not getting the quality of education they're supposed to be getting. And you're also saying you want to investigate the reasons for the dropout. But if you go to your slide, I think it's slide 7, you have actually outlined the reasons, your challenges that you've outlined here, clearly states, you know, why these people are, you know, are dropping out. No one would sit in such a situation that you've given us here. And then finally, apparently there's been a request from the prisoners to access your abbot, to access abbot. Have you done anything about that? Give us, you know, your progress report on that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members. From my side, let me also echo the sentiments of the efforts that you have made since the last presentation that you gave and the one that you give today. If we look at the various things that you put in your presentation, I trust that I can say that your attempt is a lot towards making sure that the entire system becomes more of a qualitative nature as opposed just to put up, you know, a little brick and mortar and let the little house stand and then let's see who goes in. So I think that's quite important to make sure that the system becomes a very strong system and one that provides the kind of education that is supposed to be intended. I want to look on the Western Cape one. I think it seems we are far from being out of the woods. My office continue to receive problems as it relates to payments that they both as it relate to the increment as well as the lecture problems, as well as victimization, bullying, all of that stuff, as well as all sorts of illegal, you know, appointments, as you said earlier on, that has been made. And then, of course, the payments, the salary payments that they still have not received since December. Now, I think I can forward the information, the other details of the information to you. But I think let's restore order in the Western Cape because it's untenable. And I think all the past illegal practices that you are trying to clean up must come to an end in this province. May I suggest and ask that when you come and do a presentation to us again, maybe what you must bring us closer to is the intended purpose of why we have continuing education colleges. So let me start with the governance. Can you tell us, and are you satisfied that in every institution the governance is now in place? So for example, do you have a little student representative council that has been set up already? Do you have a council? Do you have a board everywhere? Because I get worried that you must make sure that you keep the money because none of that has been put in place. So let's start there and see whether the legal entities have been put in place, and if not, what is your target towards that, realizing that, so that we make sure that all these colleges become, I'm not sure if I should say independent, but for lack of a better word, but become and function in the manner that they are supposed to, so that they take the responsibilities that they are supposed to. And the department is not seized with this thing all the time of having to do that. That's the first one that I want to ask. The second one that I want to ask is, having put the governance in place, let's turn to what is supposed to then happen in these colleges. So I note the slide where you have all the weaving and, you know, all of those things. I'm pretty sure that's not quite what is supposed to be happening, because we can give that to arts and culture and let them do all that training, or maybe ask arts and culture to pay for it, because you are, you know, you are doing all of it. But I think what you must report to us is, whatever is happening there, are people being made employable? Because the program is not a program that is just, look, let some people come and so on. It's supposed to assist towards employment, and it's also supposed to assist to allow some people to get into further vocation. And then there's supposed to be a connection also towards other higher education and training institutions. Can you help us to tell us then, out of the segment of people, notwithstanding the problems that you've raised about seasonal and all of that, but where there are people absolutely seeing that really this is where we are being driven towards and why we have come there, then we can then see whether we are achieving that objective. And that is, we've been able to move people out of employment through this program into employment, and sometimes many times into self-employment also. May I also ask that when you give us these different reports, can you also tell us, have you not looked at the need to, or has it happened, where, I mean, the minister is, for example, supposed to see whether you can merge some of these colleges. I get the impression the way you have received them from the provinces is the way they still are. So that means all of them proliferated everywhere else, one year in the Strand, the other one there in Cambridge, the other one next to across the road, whatever. Have you undertaken such a task, and is it not the right time to do that? I then want to put a controversial proposal on the table for the program. And that is, if we look at the financial structure of the colleges. So the financial structure relies obviously on the state, which government is supposed to give all the money, and we've heard you and we've really seen both in the APP and today what you are saying there. But then if you look at the other finances, they are quite reliant on the colleges to bring in resource. So they must fundraise, they must receive money from all of it. Have you tested whether they have the ability, and are they doing that? Are they generating that kind of financing themselves? Because they have been able to make, you know, they've been able to make contact with all sorts of different people. So my union, where I came from, we've got a big program around literacy training. So have you been able to see, and we've been able to take very many people through. There are people that have become doctors and lawyers and engineers and whatever out of this program, simply by clothing workers giving a small amount of money towards this thing. Have you been able to gauge whether, you know, all of these little programs that are around, especially in industry? I'm saying this thing because if you look at the program of DTI, The one that said that if you have an export plan, together with your export plan, you must have training happening. So in industry, they do this thing. Have you been able to put this thing together to see how that can assist you also? Because I think, honourable members, as far as the financing is concerned, I don't think that we should stay with the current regime that we have. Why can't we, you see, you are asking poor people to come in there and pay. Do you think they're going to stay? Stay there. They are going to go and find a job and come back in 3 months' time. They are going to. So why have we introduced free education everywhere and we exclude this group of people? And I'm asking, can you extend the NASFAS funding to them? Or can you make sure that the NASFAS pays directly into these colleges? Or can you find a regime that speaks to, because many of your issues that you speak to has to do with the setup of the resource. So I think, why don't we admit this one we have overlooked a little bit insofar as the financing model is concerned, and it's not properly sorted out. Let me end by saying that if you don't have information today on private colleges, can you tell us what is happening in the private colleges? How many of them are there? Because you are supposed to be also responsible in this regard. So, DDG, unless there's anyone else, may I ask that let's put together one that says that these are your targets. This is what you would want to achieve. You have now sorted out governance everywhere, and these people are not, you're not going to babysit them anymore. These adults must take, the councils must report to you and at some point to Parliament on what it is that they have achieved as councils, and that they take a full responsibility as the law requires on everything else. Because as long as we babysit and we carry on like this, you will continue to tell us these sad stories, and those that are supposed to be responsible are not taking that responsibility. So between all of you, you can decide who want to answer what, but let me hand over to you to answer. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Can I just talk to the issue of infrastructure, training infrastructure? The system neither has the appropriate training, neither has infrastructure for training, nor a budget for maintenance. The budget goes to compensation and to LTSM and goods and services. What I was talking about when I was talking about maintenance, I was saying even in instances where the college has its own building, there are limitations in terms of the colleges having resources to maintain the building. I'm not really talking about workshops. That's basically what I was talking about. Honourable Member Bozuli, each centre is managed by a centre manager. A centre manager who is supposed to make sure that the lecturers attend and the lecturers teach. The other issue you referred to is at the point when our chief negotiator goes to the chamber, then at that point there must be an agreement of what do we do with the teachers who are in the system but they are not qualified. For For a number of years, I was in the Tibet colleges. We confronted the same problem. But the agreement was reached that they must be given a particular number of years to get qualified or thereafter go. Let me also just say there is no intention to force people to do things that they don't want to do. If you want to complete your matric, so be it. That's the service that you want. If you want to have a particular skill, that is the service that you want. In other words, we're trying to make the system more responsive to what is required rather than us prescribing. The case in Gauteng, for instance, the province then took a conscious decision that the students who are failing matric and they would want to complete, and they must go into the what then was public adult learning centers. That tradition has continued since. And the type of the teacher you find there is a teacher who is qualified in the mainstream system. And the varied nature of hours in Gauteng, they start from 3 hours a day, five hours a day, to 8 out of 8. Yeah, within the same province in different centers. And that's how they operate. You know, the Sector Education and Training Authorities are keen to enter into this space. But Honorable Member Bozuri and Chair, the issue is once you transfer funding for training to the college, it becomes public money. And public money has got to be systems of accounting for it at the end of each year. It is those systems that we are trying to build and get out of it. Honorable Member Mavunda, the translation of the working hours. This is actually a temporary solution which is meant to include the benefits such as pension, medical aid, housing allowance, regardless of what range of hours you fall in. If we were to go for 8 out of 8 for everyone, We can't afford them. Let's say there were 10,000 and we appoint everyone on the 8 out of 8 permanent full time, you can't afford them in terms of funding. But also you don't have infrastructure that allows people to work 8 out of 8 hours. And therefore you scale in terms of hours as the infrastructure allows, but no one shall be less than 3 out of 8 hours. And also the story of Fridays is the story which we are going to negotiate out of the system. You work five days a week, whatever number of hours you are contracted for. We realize the inconsistencies which we have taken over now. We want to confront them right away through a labor relations process, through a collective bargaining process. Those lecturers, I'm saying, are unemployable in the system for us. These are lecturers or teachers who are already in a government department such as basic education. So such a lecturer, you can't give benefits again, because they are already, in fact, when you take this person on person and just kick them out, because they are already in the personal system. But if they are rendering a service, what is called the performance administration measures, it prescribes what is the rate at which they should be paid, and therefore they have to claim, because they can't be appointed permanently in the CET system, because they are permanently employed in the basic education system. Those are the ones I was talking about. Honorable member on the basis, we do have a vision. The fact that the magnitude of our ambition far exceeds the means and resources within us, but we have to have a vision of making this system work. And therefore, our view is that you have to have people who are permanent, but you also have to have people who are part-time. You know, some of the projects, it may be a 6 month project and then it is done. And you take another project, it requires a different skill, and then you contract on the basis of what services are needed by the communities. Therefore, you have to have the backbone, and you have to have posts allocated to a college in terms of the post provisioning rooms. So here are the posts. For an example, you can use 70% of them for the full-time staff. By the other 30%, please respond to the needs as the community demands of you. And that is how flexible the system, we would like the system to operate. Operational hours. As I've indicated, it is not possible to have to prescribe for the rest of the system a similar number of operational hours, because their capabilities, in their capacity in terms of infrastructure, even within one and the same province, there will be a center which uses a school, let me say for St. Francis down the street. It uses its own center, and therefore it works 8 out of 8 hours and even more. And in the same breath, there will be another center which can only use the basic school building, and then they can only take over 5 hours at the end of the school day. And therefore, you contract your lecturing staff accordingly, but within the range of the Public Service Act and as allowed by in terms of labor relations. With regard to the correctional facilities, quite a number of correctional facilities in this country run our adult basic education program. They administer our examinations. When we do training for curriculum, correctional services facilities are represented, and when we set question papers, they go to provinces. Provinces distribute according to the list submitted to them by the college, and in many instances, these correctional facilities are part of the examination center list. So that facility, like the NSC, also offers the GETC. When we change to the NASCA qualification, and also it will be made available to them in the same manner as we do with the NSC. I'm taking a keen interest in the Western Cape, and I'm working with the regional office, Mr. Percy Kruger, to clean out, because there are practices which do not want to come to the surface, and we also have to deal with the defensive mode when we try to approach pretty closer, and it's like we have a caucus now. Two of you are not going to talk. I'm the only one talking. And I had a meeting like that here. And now, that is the thing you have to break down. The level at which we have not gone, I think we do need to go. If we were to engage with center managers, there is a possibility that we might get a different version in the story. If we engage at the level, at the moment we have engaged with the management and council. But some of these things, the email on one of these things, I got it this morning from one of the SAEU members who, for one reason or the other, I don't know why, he was not paid, but something which we actually have to follow on an individual basis instead of generalizing. You take the names of people and you follow up with HR. Are these people paid? Why are they not paid? Chair, we have councils for all 9 provinces. We have a 4-member management for all 9 provinces. Principals and 3 deputies. Currently, we are training SRCs out of the 8 colleges. Only the Western Cape does not have an SRC. Now, I've asked the management and council, why not? What have they done to try to put the SRCs in place? As we train the SRCs, from here I'm going on to PE to conclude the last batch of the 34, 36 SRC members from the 4 colleges who are still outstanding. But this, the Western Cape is not there, is something we must get into. However, Chair, having said we have put these structures in place, it does not say, I can't defend and say, no, they all have the capacity to have the oversight function over the colleges. I can't vouch and say all the principals are real good, true leaders. I still have to observe and see what is happening, and then when necessary, intervene. But at a particular point, one has got to allow them space to operate. And part of the reason why we are building the capacity at the colleges is because we want to get out of them so that the council do their work in terms of the oversight and fiduciary functions, and management does the management. Lastly, on my part, I'm going to ask my colleagues to the minister has asked the branch that this 779 centers in one under one college, can we give her a proposal as to how we deal with these things? Because you might find that within a radius of a kilometer, there are 3 of these centers, and I discovered at one point in the Bizana area, there were 5 lecturers and 3 students. Now, 3 students, and they are quite flexible. And these are the things which we must clean. These are the things which we must clean. So that I've committed to make a draft proposal to the minister by June as to how do we balance accessibility and rationalization of the center. And that we have already been requested to do by the minister. Fundraising, they are into it. The college, they are going full steam to raise funds, but I must be fair to them because we are the ones who keep saying, hey, please, whoever you are raising funds for, let them keep their money, you give them the invoice. Because if you receive the money, as we have, you do not have a way of accounting for it. Once we build that capacity, they are at liberty to do so because they are already doing the fundraising, particularly for the skilling. Chair, let me ask my colleagues to add if they want to add. Mrs. Cotison.
Thanks, Chair, for the opportunity. I think Dr. Masaba has covered almost all the questions that they asked, but I just want to add that, you know, in terms of the program diversification, like I'm mentioning, that we can actually expand and look into a number of programs which are actually assisting these people to be employed, if they want to be employed. I just want to say that the training that is happening currently with the SRCs has given us, I think, as a department, an opportunity to engage with the actual student who's actually in our colleges. And it has been very interesting because the people who are there, we had somebody who was as young as 18, and I think the oldest who was there with the group that we have seen now was around 34 years old. The majority of them are young people. And when we ask them in terms of their hopes, why are they coming to our centers and so on, most of them are still dreaming to become. They are, and I guess it also explains why the majority of the learners in Gauteng are actually going for matric. Most of them are still saying that I want to complete my matric, I still want to become a doctor, I want to become this and that. So those are the people that we are actually having in our centers. And maybe it also explain why in terms of our skills enrollment we are only sitting at around 3,000, because the majority that we have are actually still saying we want to complete our matric, and if that is what they want and what they have come for, we therefore, you know, have that obligation to be responsive to them, to provide them that opportunity to be able to go into further education or to actually pursue whatever careers that they think they want to pursue. And we then sit with a more smaller number who are actually coming for skills as it is at the moment. But it's a space that we actually need to advocate for so that we are actually becoming the true community education where we actually want to see these colleges going in into the future. I think that's my addition. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chair. I just want to make the honourable members aware that, research have shown all over the world that the quality of teachers or lecturers plays a very, very important part in attracting or retaining students or learners. Now, one of our biggest challenges, as Dr. Mahlobe has explained, that we have a cohort of unqualified lecturers in our centers. Now, that's why the question of what makes these students to drop out. These are adult students, these are young people. If they find that lecturers are are of not a good quality. Obviously, these young people, these adults, will move away from that lecturers. Maybe that's one of the reasons, as Dr. Mahlova has said, that probably research will show that the quality of lecturers in our centers play an important part of student dropping from us, and I just wanted to add that. Thank you, Chair.
Just want to talk about private colleges, Chair, briefly. This function is in the department, but not in the branch. When this new act was passed, you can only be public community, public TVET. Anything else is a private college, and that is why even if you are offering programs at this level, you get registered as a private college, and that function is managed in the TVET branch. But one thing what I can do is just to go check of those that are registered who is offering the qualification within our space. Thanks.
Okay. Can I find it from the members? Is there anyone that has got an urgent question or two further that they want to put? Honourable van der Westhuizen and Kekana.
Chief, may I just ask, where to next? You have said you want to standardize service conditions. I'm not sure that we have seen what's going to happen next, that we can go out of here with something that we can keep the department to and that can fill us with the necessary enthusiasm and excitement. Have you got intended figures? Do you want to turn around the decrease in the numbers of students? Or are you coming up with new and exciting qualifications? Are you going to do something about this level 2 to 4, which is actually at level 1? What are your plans in that regard, sir?
I wonder.
Chair, the lecturers in the rural areas in particular, my experience is that rural areas like in Limpopo have teaching as a big industry to employ people there for basic education, all the high schools, primary schools. So in the rural areas, given the fact that there are shortages of private sector job opportunities, teaching is seen as a big industry for employing people there. Now the artisans that are already there, can they be recruited? Because at least they have experience. And maybe a special course be designed just to teach them how to teach, because I don't see how else we're going to get people with practical experience teaching the youth there. But there is already a tradition of people going into teaching. If you want white collar jobs, teaching is there already, acknowledged as an industry for teaching. I mean for job opportunity. So the question is, artisans, can they be recruited? Because the culture is already for teachers.
Thanks, Chair. I'm not sure if I'm able to reconcile the CET and the higher education, because you are saying there are those students who understand that they want to complete their matric in the CETs. Is that correct? Now, is it metric not, it's not part of basic education? Because the fact that you will have lecturers who have got these qualifications and be given the irrelevant subjects, I think it's as a result of that situation. I'm just thinking. I'm saying this from the experience. I've been a private teacher for some years, and what they used to do in the past was to say, for a number of years, when you are a private teacher in a particular school, for a number of 5 years, then you get married, then you get certificated, a qualified, now you become a qualified because of those number of years in that particular field. They called it merit. So I'm not sure if really it will work better for us as a country, you know, to have students who want to complete their matric through the CET with proper qualified teachers. I see it becoming very difficult because even in our area where I come from, there are those students who are put together and go through this program. But there are a lot of problems in there. Because I think the chairperson said it, to say there will be people who will say, because I do not have money to pay, let me get a peace job for a certain period of time, then I'll come back. Because you take the dropouts, those who were unable to even qualify grade 8, and graduate them to grade 12 when they did not even pass grade 8, because they come there want to pass the matric. And I think it also frustrates lecturers, as I understand it, because I'm not sure if there are subjects which are selected to say in this, we've got different streams which they have to qualify through. So what I just want to understand is to whether this CET takes the level of both higher education and basic education. Because we can't have maybe the teacher who might be able to teach those dropouts, because obviously they are dropouts. The fact that they are unable to pass matric repeatedly, they become dropouts. So I'm not sure if my question is heard enough, but I will expect the answer, Chairperson.
All right. I think Dr. Mashoba, if you just explain continuing education, training, this is the... He is new in the committee, so maybe you can take the opportunity just to explain. I know as soon as you say matric, everyone says basic education. And why are you? So I think let's just explain the difference of what has been created to have a vehicle like the CET and why the ability of attracting different people for different purposes they would come in there. I'm going to hand over you to answer these the additional questions, and then we will end the meeting there. I think I did say earlier on, when we have you before us again, we would want to structure it in the manner that I said earlier on, so that for the committee we can start seeing whether there is true improvement and that the objectives that we are getting closer to, the objectives that has been set, and that we don't have a general presentation, but we zoom into the specifics more, so that we know that your plans that you have set out in the APP is what you will give more flesh to month on month as you report to us, and that you start prioritizing. You are happy that governance is in place, but the following still can't. Because if you have councils everywhere, then by when are we going to make sure that they are confident enough to take on the responsibilities? It's not going to help to tell us you've got councils everywhere. Because if they can't do what they're supposed to, then it means you don't have councils in place, amongst many others. I know some of my other questions you have ducked, and I appreciate it, because you will come back and you will still answer those things. I would afford an opportunity to yourself and the department to mull over what I've put on the table and then accordingly respond to it. Welcome, Honorable Singh. This is Higher Education and Training. back to you, and then we end it there.
Just to respond to the question asked by Honorable Van der Westhuizen, I think for the department, the first thing that we want to work on this year is to get rid of the stigmatization of the sector by having people uncertificated. And it is actually part of the reason why the question is, are you going to the community learning center? What's the point? You're not going to get a certificate. That if we can crack that during the course of 2018 and one problem solved, which has been a deterrent to access. The second thing is just stabilize labor peace in the centers. My colleagues and ourselves have put ourselves a target of the end of the year to say, here is a concrete proposal, let us negotiate, so that then the ball is in the court of the department and labor after we have put a proposal in place. Because if we close that side, again, the inefficiencies that you see the excuse of the underperformance of the centers, then it's gone. And those are the things. And lastly, we have not advocated for the program enough. We have to go to community radio station and present what is it that these centers are offering and what are the operating hours and who can come and who can't come. And basically those are the three things which, without going into, you see, the policy things, we are done with it. Now we have to implement and also look at the quality of the service being delivered. Honorable Member Kekana, it is possible to appoint artisans. At the moment, there hasn't been a college which has actually put an ad and said, we need artisans for 1, 2, 3, 4. Because when you appoint an artisan, please, you must have the appropriate infrastructure where this person is going to train. You can't appoint an artisan and you find the person is going to work in a school classroom. And therefore, we just have to identify the centers where then the colleges go full steam, build infrastructure, and then hire artisans. But also the appointment for colleges is done by the department. So that recruitment has to be done by the department. But understanding that the college has infrastructure where this person is going to train. CET and higher education. Community education and training in the context of post-school education and training. In other words, to serve those people who never had a chance to get their qualification, but the basic education can no longer help them. And this is the space where they must come. The products of basic education, you remain eligible to continue with basic education 3 years after you have first wrote matric. You year one, year two, year three. And then thereafter, you are no longer the problem of basic education. Somewhere, you have to find a home to enable you to complete your matric. Therefore, it is correct that matric is a basic education qualification. But what if, in terms of age, you can't be in the basic education anymore? What is the space that we create for you? We create community education and training space to serve you. The cohort in basic education are age-based. If you are 15 or you are 16, you still want to do grade 1, you can't go to basic education for a literacy program. Somewhere you must be accommodated to be able to learn to read and write within the post-school education and training, and which was the fundamental difference between saying the sector is higher education and training, and the sector we dubbed it post-school to serve those who can no longer be served by the schooling system. And those are the services we render. In the context of qualification structure, formal qualification structure, we offer qualifications from level 1 up to level 4 by law. Level 4, it's up to your NSC. Remember, some of you honorable members might have done what used to be called the Report 550, Senior Certificate. There are people, there's no such a thing in basic education as a qualification. But if you have three pieces, you need an additional three. We provide you with an opportunity to complete, and then you'll get it. For articulation thereafter into the world of work, into the world of higher education, or whatever other training you might need to do after we have given you that opportunity. And that's how it works. CET, community education and training, in the context of post-school education and training. The getting into an NSC program, there are minimum requirements. You can't move from dropping out at grade 8 and then you land into a matric program. You first have to finish your level 1 program, which is the GTC, and then thereafter you can proceed to foundation program, which prepare you to be able to cope with the rigors of matric. It is in that context that we have couched the concept of community education and training, both in terms of general education, occupations and technical, and your general community-based programs, which are offered by some of our colleges. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you again, Dr. Maslovo, and the rest of the team for the presentation. I trust that it's clear on what it is that we would be expecting next. We will take your certificate issue into the rest of the certificate presentation that the department normally brings, the quarterly one, and then we can see there what progress are being made also. But on that basis, may we thank you very much. We will continue to shoulder on to make sure that success comes out of this program. And we think there's quite a bit of more collaboration that is required. And we totally support you when you say that the image of the sector must be one that is alongside, not after everyone else. And if we're able to get that right, then I think that many of the other things can follow also. If there's a stepchildren syndrome, something that we will not support alongside everyone else. On that basis, honourable members, we'll take leave from the department. On outside, honourable members, I want to ask, next week, honourable members, we must deal with the many, many reports that we have. And I am going to ask your assistance when we have to deal with those reports, if you can go through them, if you can pass on recommendations so that we can, it's a bit of them that we have to deal with. Of course, honourable members, you know the rule is that before a budget vote is done, we must have dealt with the APP and so on. So we want to deal with all of them next week. We're not inviting anyone. We must clean our table with all the reports that we are having. So, honourable members, I want to end the meeting there. Honourable Bazoli.
Chair, I wrote you a letter asking you if you could try and make sure that NIFSAT comes urgently to the committee to report on their failure to manage the fee-free higher education new system adequately, and the plight that many students have found themselves in without money or accommodation, and some of them without money for food. And I'm surprised that, you know, we didn't we won't be able to fit them in next week. I don't see how checking reports is going to take 3 hours. So it seemed to me we would have time next week, and that it's our responsibility to get NISFAP to account to us for the situation that thousands of students find themselves in. Thank you. Any response, honourable members? Gillian?
Chairperson, I think it's a pity because we have had NSFAS before us. Honourable Bazzoli was then away during the meeting that we had with him. They explained exactly in which circumstances they find themselves. Thereafter, it was also the minister who addressed the media to explain the different categories. In many cases, the students have not signed their agreement, etc., and that was dealing with the backlog. So I do think that unless there's any new information that is coming to the fore, I believe that all parties are requested to assist. But we could ask them for an update report, but not necessarily have them before us, because their report to us was very extensive last time. That was a week or two ago, if my recollection. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, Chair, I think the one thing where we must pat ourselves on the shoulder is this thing of a system that is new, that is catching up with all that has happened in the past. In my own opinion, we've done very well, because so far I haven't seen in any area a crisis situation. Obviously, it isn't what it is supposed to be. It will take a while still to get it polished, but things are running smooth. I think students are enthusiastic to embrace this opportunity that has never being in South Africa and go to school. And as far as them using the money to go to university, I think they are doing that. And even in our oversight, we saw that institutions were doing the best they can to use a system that is new to them. And NSFAS also, the way they reported, they've never had a situation where you could say, yes, this is a total failure. I think they're making the best out of a worst situation of just being given a short time to use this system. So for the first time, I think we can pat ourselves on the shoulder as South African. We've done very well, and in this area, I think things will work out. There's a big promise there.
Thank you, Chairperson. I find it very interesting, Honourable Killian's response, because some 2 weeks ago, when I said I wanted to hear some intentions, some plans, etc., the response was, no, 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 we are here to report on the annual performance plan, which is what NSFAS did. But it was explained to me that needed to be done in a particular format or template as required by Treasury, etc., etc. So, you know, don't come here with what you really want to know. We are only here to do what is required by Treasury. Now that we're asking, please, there are really dire and imminent issues that we need some answers on, which obviously then falls outside of the template or of Treasury. Now we're here, but no, they have been here some 2 weeks ago. We cannot deny, Chair, that many of our campuses have burned in the past because of certain failures, failures for which I believe we are ultimately responsible to do some oversight and see if we can avoid a reoccurrence of that. And we have some serious concerns that have not been addressed up to now. We have some serious questions which we were then guided not to ask because it doesn't form part of our annual performance plan. And we want that opportunity, please. Thank you.
Lavenda?
Thanks, Chair. I think Honorable Killian even indicated to say, unless if we have got a specific issue which we think we have to call NSFAS to come and present. But I think one other issue, or maybe thing can help us, is to get the minister's media statement. Because the same day she presented this information to the media, it was the same day in which NSFAS came to present, if I'm not wrong. Yes. If that is correct, it means maybe we are still dealing with the issues which have been already addressed by the minister's statement. But if we can get that statement and go through it, maybe we'll be able to identify some of the things which we think need to be addressed. Because the manner in which NSFAS presented for many issues which we thought they were not clear, they were cleared on that day, Chairperson. And maybe to call them every now and then, even before they acted on the outstanding questions and stuff like that, might not yield the result that we wanted. Because sometimes if I ask a question to a presenter and that presenter gives an answer, only to find that the answer does not suit exactly what I want, but it's the answer which gives the information to the question I ask based on that what person is doing. And I think it will not be enough for us to say they can come and present again, even before we know exactly what is it that it's outstanding out of the presentation that they have made. Thanks, Shepherd.
Honourable Grisoli, the last one on this issue.
Chair, I find it very interesting that the ANC members of this committee think it important to defend NSFAS and prevent it from coming to answer for itself. That seems to me to indicate that there probably is an issue that we need to look at. And it only makes me more keen to get NSFAS in. Now, just to go to the Minister's press statement, which I have read, the minister was furious with NSFAS at that meeting. She was really angry with them. And the reason she was angry with them is because many students who have signed their agreements have still not received their money. It is not only a matter of not signing agreements. Many, many students who have signed their agreements have not received their money. And that is a matter for extreme irritation and anger on the part of the minister. So if the minister is so angry with NSFAS and her press statement does not fully cover the details of why, I believe we are bound to try and find out what's going on. I would like to know how many students have still not received money. I want them to come and answer that. How many have still not received money? How many received money and when did
did they receive their money? It's not good enough to just say, oh, shame, you know, they're really struggling. I agree with that. The former president did dump them in a very poor situation by suddenly making them change their entire system within a month. I agree with that. Nevertheless, we have to look after the interests of students who are not being paid their money. I understand that a number of colleges actually are closed down as a result of NSFAS protests. So, of course there's new information here. This is a major issue among students. I'm not sure whether people are aware of it. It's a huge issue among students. And, you know, we will once again be seen as defending an inept institution that is not serving the interests of the public.
Honourable members, I don't know what it is you are arguing about, because I want to remind you at the last meeting that we had NSFAS before us, we took a decision they must come back. We have taken that decision. We went even further in that meeting. We have everything you are saying, Honourable Bazzoli, we have put to them in that meeting. We went further and we said in that meeting, if you remember, Honourable Members, that we don't think we should ask NSFAS to come alone. Do you remember? We said that we must bring the other stakeholders also, because our own oversight suggests that the one blames the other one. And it would be far better for this committee to bring all of them into this room, so that we hear from the student bodies, we hear from the university bodies, from the college bodies, all of them. That was the decision that you have taken. So I'm not quite sure what it is that we are discussing, because we have taken such a decision. And we have agreed in that meeting also that we will bring NSFAS, not next week. We have said that we will bring NSFAS before us. I think it's either the week thereafter or the week thereafter. We have agreed with that. So that's why I don't understand what the discussion is about, because we have agreed that NSFAS must come. And we went further in this meeting and said that many more must come, because the committee have said that we want to change. In that same meeting we said we want to change our oversight on NSFAS, on what are the different things that we would want to discuss with NSFAS, as opposed to just giving us the usual quarterly reports that they should bring before us. And I think that that decision still stands, Honourable Members, and that that's exactly what we're going to do. So if that's the understanding, that we took that decision already and we have broadened the decision far bigger than what we are discussing now, then on that basis I close the meeting. And I thank you.